From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
My guest tonight, John Hogue. Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies. We will talk about the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster. Mavis, just who might that be? Here's a little quatrain I wanted to read to you. Mavis will soon die. Then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. At once, one will see vengeance. 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. We're going to talk with John Hogue about that and much more about the prophecies of Nostradamus in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. John Hogue describes himself as a rogue scholar. He has traveled three times around the world studying meditation disciplines, reporting on new religious movements, cults, compiling a reference of the world's prophecies concerning the future of humankind entering a new millennium. Considered a world-renowned authority in Nostradamus and other prophetic traditions, Hogue is critically acclaimed for his ability to cut through all this social, religious, and nationalistic projections of prophets and their interpreters to find threads of insight that they all share. He's the author of 10 books in 18 languages, has received wide international recognition, appearing on more than 60 television and 500 radio shows on three continents. Welcome to Coast, Mr. Hogue. Good to talk with you again, John. How are you?
I'm doing fine, George.
Good, good. Lots going on these days, John.
Well, you know, we are now, since 1983, when I started publishing my findings on prophecy, and since that time, I have noticed that I always thought that sometime after the year 2000, either on the year 2000 or a few years after, history, especially for the United States, would end, as George Will once said, its long vacation with history. America would end it. And we would start seeing things accelerate into what is usually a 500-year evolutionary crisis that humanity all over the world usually faces. Last time we faced this was during the Renaissance period, where in these kinds of periods you'll see tremendous advances and change, but you will also see tremendous resistance to the change. In the time of the Renaissance, you saw a resurrection of intellectual thought, of questioning dogmatic religions and ideas, an advance into science. But you also saw some of the bloodiest religious wars because of that very resistance to change and questioning dogmas. So we are, in this current 500-year cycle, are beginning our own period of tremendous advances, even more than we've seen in the last 50 years, as well as dealing with a resistance to the next step in our civilization, which, for better or worse, is a global step. The ideas of nationalism, in fact, many of the ideas of religion as we know them, will be so changed in 100 years that we will not recognize them beyond the old names that we used for them, country, religion, whatever.
It'll be a dramatic change too, won't it?
It will be quite dramatic, and it's now begun. It has begun, and certain signs, your last guest was very informative from the point of view of empirical study of the issue of global warming, and as I was listening to Bob Reese speak, I pulled out a number of prescient documentation of these future outcomes of global warming that I've been writing about for 20 years from different prophetic traditions that have clearly warned us about global famine as being the source of the next great world war, that many various groups, as various as Aztec seers to biblical seers to Chinese and Native and Aboriginal and others, have been saying that the oceans would rise and flood the lands, that the atmosphere would heat up, that there would be great droughts that would cover entire continents. Nostradamus himself described a famine that would take place where He said that there would be a time when bushels of wheat would rise so high that man would devour his fellow man. And for so long, that has been a riddle. People didn't quite understand, well, how can you have so much food and yet so much famine?
Right, yeah.
I sometimes wonder if this French seer from the 16th century had been looking into the future and seeing the vast mountains of grain, literal mountains, hills of grain that you well know from living in Kansas region in the Midwest, that there, imagine if you were a 16th century man when food was at best still marginal, to see mountains of wheat. And yet if you could see into that future modern time, you would also see that half the world is malnutritioned and many parts of the world are suffering from famine. Now, in that regard, he also had another prophecy which also sounds quite modern day when he said, if I can find it, yes, the great global famine will be so vast and long-lasting that people will grab roots from the trees and children from the breast. And earlier in the prophecy, he talked about how it would be a that would come in here and there. It would just sort of appear in one region, another region, and then spread across the world. Now, what you've got to wonder when our science advances beyond our wisdom, that we shall start creating pollen, genetically altering pollen, and yet not keep those experiments under wraps so that that pollen is actually blowing all over the world. Who's to say that we aren't already sowing the seeds of some neutralized grain that will take the bread baskets right out of the world?
See, and we don't know that. We just might be.
We might be, and this comes back to the basic theme that defines this crisis that we're in right now, that humanity always hits every 500 years, only this one is far more significant as far as prophetic calendars go, because not only is it the beginning of a new 500-year jump in evolution with all of its travails as well as breakthroughs, but it's also the end in a greater cosmic clock of the roughly 27,000-year cycle of the precession of the equinoxes, which means, in layman's terms, it means that there's this great cosmic year that's 27,000 years long. Its months are what we call the age of Pisces, the age of Aquarius, and so forth. Its days, if you were to divide it in units of cosmic days, is a 36-year period of yang or male energy instigating ideas and a 36-year period of feminine night in the day. In this cosmic day. Now, the last time that we had a shift was quite a volatile period. That was 1972-73.
And what happened there that was so volatile?
What was volatile is that we saw the seeds sown for the things that are coming to a head now as we reach the next change in 2008. And those seeds were, we saw the rise of global terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Russia and America nearly go to war for a 9-hour period. They came actually as close to going to war as they did in the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. In 72, the Yom Kippur War had nearly launched the Soviets and Americans to fight a war over the Middle East. And as a result of Yom Kippur, the Arab oil embargo was the first gesture of the OPEC organization to show its power to the Western clients who use its fossil fuels. So you had all these things basically focusing on the difficulties of the Middle East coming to a head in the early 70s, and now, as we approach 2008, which is the beginning of the feminine 36-year cycle, everything that the, in esotericness, the, if you will, the planter, the male energy, has planted things in history, are now going to be reaped starting in 2008 on for the next 36 years.
That doesn't sound like a good thing.
Well, it is not a good thing for the negative, but remember, the world, there are two sides to every coin. And if you were somebody who would try to rub the bad side of your coin off, if you kept rubbing, you'd also destroy the good side.
Well, see, I'm the kind of person, John, I go outside and I'll say it's partly sunny, or somebody else will say it's partly cloudy.
the water in the jar is half empty or half full.
You got it.
But there's another step which this evolutionary cycle is asking us. Who's holding the glass of water? And if you know who that is, if you start to turn your attention to that source, then maybe your water won't spill.
You are literally hailed as one of the foremost authorities on Nostradamus, and we get literally now thousands of new listeners who might not know who you are, John. Very briefly, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the studies and the prophecies of Nostradamus.
I look at time and history as a pathology that needs to be understood so it can be healed. I've had that feeling. I certainly didn't have that terminology to put on it when I was younger and very young, but I was always fascinated by the patterns in history. Even as a kid, I used to voraciously read and study the patterns of history and see how it doesn't matter if people change their costumes or their languages or their religions or their weapons and their machines, they always seem to be the same. They rush to war, they forget what happened in the last war, they rush to new wars, they exhaust themselves butchering each other, and then they get remorseful for what they've done. Peace then comes, which seems to just be another respite for these energies that are unaddressed to build up again, these energies of violence, and then to commit more war. Now, that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but there's a lot more complexity to it. But that's just one of the many cycles that you see. Or another cycle you always see in history is that if someone innovates, if someone pushes the envelope of understanding, there's an innate resistance that people have to that, whether it's building a new mousetrap or building a new religion. It is there is always a resistance. And that's another pattern that seems to come in history. So with those patterns understood and many more, I, in my studies of new religious movements and all, which started me on a tour around the world since 1980, I've been going to different places. And in later years, I plan to write my conclusions on experiments that I've done, experiences I've had in the study of new religious movements.
Okay.
Because what's important to understand is in every 500-year cycle, a new great religion is always born in the world. And it's usually considered something negative in its present time, something cultish. Every religion was considered a cult when it was new. And so, but that's another thing. The issue but that was in the sideline of that study is that I started to, if you look in religions, you have to encounter prophecy. And when you encounter prophecy, if you can look at it with enough distance, not to be caught in the dogmas, but just to look at it fresh, as if you were innocent to the dogmas and expectations, you find that the future also has a history written, pre-written, by many prophets that follows the same patterns of stupidity and repetition that you find in past history. So in a way, there's future history and there's past history. So the fascination with this and led to me understanding that it's not enough just to look at this on the collective. I am part of this phenomenon, being a human being on this planet. Whatever is wrong with the world or right with the world is seated also in me. Because every new generation that's born into the world adopts the seeds and the programmings to repeat the past and call it the future. So it's not only just a study of prophecy as just some empirical distant thing, it's also a study of my own dysfunction. And human dysfunction is everyone's individual dysfunction. And I could just say in a nutshell that this evolution has brought me from 30 years of looking at collective solutions and collective problems to seeing that the real revolution that prophecy is teaching us is that there is no solution outside of yourself. Only you can change. And strangely enough, if there is a new humanity that is foreseen in positive prophecies, that humanity will come one individual at a time.
Well, do you find Nostradamus' prophecies to be enlightening or frightening?
Nostradamus is a 16th century man, and he has some of the burdens of 16th century conditioning, which in one regard is his predilection to try to scare people straight. He is the most pessimistic prophet that I've ever encountered, and he is clearly stating in his own works, if people who debunk him would actually read them, that he is very consciously setting up a device of wild poetry, obscure code for several reasons, and to also be very scary because, frankly, how much is it going to take for people to take notice? I mean, even today, walk out and look up at the sky, see how the skies are changing, the weather is changing. What more do we need? Well, the problem is that being programmed to be predictable, to make future work, tends to make us, even to our best intentions, even right now, people are listening to this show. They can say, yeah, I see, we've got to change. But as soon as this show's over, they'll switch off and not do anything to change their lives because we're programmed to do that. And Nostradamus is then trying to be very scary, I think, to shake us up, out of it.
Was he Mr. Doom and Gloom in that era?
Well, no. I'm right now finishing a book which is the first complete biography ever done on Nostradamus, in the English language at least. And it is going to be out in autumn. And it really looks at the psychology and what he was doing in his own time. And, you know, he transcended Gene Dixon, who's the only parallel I can cite in our own time.
Okay.
Somebody who documented prophecies, in her case, the death of President Kennedy. And it happened several years later, and she became very famous for that. Well,
yes.
Nostradamus documented dozens of prophecies in his own time, which he became famous for. And most of them were dire because he risked writing his prophecies and being threatened by the justices of the church and others for writing such things.
Is that why he started coding them?
He coded them because, on the one part, he saw the imminent advent of the first of nine wars of religion, civil wars in France. He foresaw the death of the king, which would cause that. There is a paper he wrote a year before it happened, Astrological Examination, where he actually said, in June of the following year, you'll see the malefic effects of this thing break the court, break the French community on religious grounds. And it was June 1559 that the king died in a jousting accident. So, unfortunately, most of his prophecies are about where we go wrong. Now, certainly I want to tell your audience that he is only one of many hundreds of prophets that I've studied over the years. There are many other groups that are far more balanced and will also give us positive alternatives. Perhaps Nostradamus is so famous because we tend to dwell on the negative when we look at the prodigious events of the future.
But unfortunately, or fortunately, he's pretty accurate.
There are certainly a lot of prophecies that are open to interpretation because of the code. And to answer your other question, he very clearly confessed in his works that he said, for years I withheld my pen, and for the harm I might do, and if to translate it in more modern English terms, he's saying, if I were to reveal clearly the changes, the vast changes that would happen for the religious points of view, political points of view, and social points of view of the people today, if they could see how vastly changed all that would be, they would essentially damn their own future. So to prevent that from happening, he clouded. He said, I wrote cloudy. I made a point, knowing full well that people will think that I'm a con artist or something like that, because I'm, you know, there's just this natural revulsion we have for anybody that doesn't speak straight. And he even said, I know that's going to happen, but I can't. I've got to, on one hand, make it clear enough so that some people can gather what's happening, but not too clear, not only because of the anger and the calumny that would come to him, but it's also... What he didn't say was between the lines is, if you're too clear, let's say that you were clearer about a man like Saddam Hussein, and let's say he read his Nostradamus in 1989 and decided not to go into Kuwait in 1990 until he had nuclear weapons. And I think President Clinton just recently said that for Korea, but he said something about how, you know, if this war were happening now, if the Gulf War that happened in 91 was happening now, we would be facing nuclear missiles. Now, if Nostradamus had said something too clear, and if somebody like Saddam Hussein said, I better not go then because this is going to happen, who would be responsible for the nuclear war in 2003? But the man who was too clear about what might have happened.
All right, stay with us. There's much more to talk about. I want to get into also some of Nostradamus' thoughts, how that can be interpreted as possibly the space shuttle disaster. And then I'd like to devote the rest of this program to talking about Mavis, the Antichrist, and what this all means to us in terms of a possible World War III. It's something that we need to talk about. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment. My guest is John Hoag, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, John Hoag, my guest. I'm George Norrie. John, a few weeks ago we had a tragedy in this country, and one could also say worldwide, if one was global when it comes to space. The space shuttle disintegrated. References from Nostradamus. Are there any tie-ins there between what happened to the shuttle and some of the things that he might have talked about in his quatrains?
The study of Nostradamus requires one to have a tactile mind, to have a mind that can be open to the metaphorical as well as the literal meanings in these prophecies. If these prophecies are purposely written in a cloudy, nebulous manner, one has to be able to flow between the objective and the subjective and find a balance. There are a number of references to the importance of comets being in the sky when the third of Nostradamus' three antichrists appears. The first two have already appeared. One was under the anagram Polne Alaron, which, if the prophecy shows, Century 8, Quatrain 1, makes it very clear that these are three towns. But these three towns are doing things that a person, very similar to the actions of Napoleon Bonaparte, was doing in the beginning of the 19th century. So if the actions in the prophecy seem to parallel a man rather than three towns, a person must drop a rigid understanding that these three bold-faced Paul, nay, Oleron, are not southwestern towns, but actually an anagram for the name of the man.
Right.
And they are indeed a very simple anagram. Napalanois has to also be in French. Lois, it means king. Napalan is, interestingly enough, the Corsican spelling similar to Napoleone Buonaparte, which was what Napoleon was called before he Gallicized his name to Napoleon Bonaparte, because he was born in Corsica. By the way, Nostradamus also said of this tyrant that he would be short-cropped hair, that he would rule for 14 years, and that he was born near Italy. Napoleon spoke Italian. He did cut his long locks to short locks, and he did indeed run a tyranny over France for 14 years, from 1799 to 1814. He also would have a strange name that no king of France ever had. Well, Napoleon is a strange name, certainly for a French king. So that was
no
the
doubt,
first.
No doubt, yeah.
No, the first was that. Now, there was another man who would come in the center of Europe, and his name is a play on the ancient name of the River Danube, which is the Easter, H-I-S-T-E-R. And it clearly, though, is for anyone who will let their mind fly and not be rigid and literalist, you'll see that this river is doing a lot of things, or is being besieged by a lot of people, which shows that it's not a river, it's a person. Well, there was a person born near the River Danube who grew up in Linz, Austria, on the River Danube, and his name was Hister, Hitler. And so there you have, and he's also called the Captain of Greater Germany. Interesting salutation from Nostradamus, because the Captain of Greater Germany, the title Greater Germany, was the official state title for the Third Reich, which was Gross Deutschland, Greater
That's right.
Germany. He would break unions in the year 38, 41, 42, and 45. Now, one of the codes Nostradamus used was to drop the first two numbers of a century so that you didn't know which century so clearly. Clearly, this century is the 20th century because, indeed, there were pacts that were broken. The League of Nations around 38, with the armaments programs increased by Hitler, the pact between the Soviets and the Germans in 41, when Hitler invaded the Soviet Union, was broken, and then finally in 45, the pact or treaty that was broken was a tripartite treaty of the axis of Germany, Italy, and Japan, which was crumbled in the war. Which, by the way, was predicted in a prophecy saying the great empire will fall in the Ardennes. He talks about a great empire being overthrown in the Ardennes, and it's not in code. He says the Ardennes. That is the location for the Battle of the Bulge. Guess what the indexing for that prophecy is?
Tell me.
Century or Volume 5, Quatrain or Four-Line Poem 45. 545, the fifth month of 1945, was May. May was when, the beginning of May was when World War II ended.
That's right.
So these are, it takes a while, and I've been doing this for 30 years, it takes a while to get under your psyche, into the fibers of your brain, the way Nostradamus plays with words.
A normal person, and I mean by the word normal, someone who is not schooled or who has done this regularly, would read these and it would go right over his or her head, wouldn't it?
And worse, there have been many. Every interpreter of Nostradamus will see their projections in the clouds of Nostradamus's writing. You know how the old game when you're a kid and you look up at the clouds and you start arguing with your schoolmate on that cloud looks like a giraffe. No,
yeah.
That cloud looks like
it's
a
my
buffalo.
Uncle. Yeah.
Well, a lot of Nostradamus' writing is an exercise in putting an image on the cloud. And 9 out of 10 times, the image you put on the cloud is something that you want to see or something that you're afraid to see. And it also goes for the people who wear the mantle of skeptic, but really don't seem to know what the word means in its Greek roots, which means simply to investigate. So many people who make a profession out of being skeptics of Nostradamus tend to not know what the word they call themselves means and act more like cynics, which means I come into this investigation with my conclusions already made that this is bunk. And, of course, if you walk into a study of cloudy Nostradamus, you will see in the shapes of his clouds bunk. And equally, you will also see other people who are on the other extreme think they talk to Nostradamus. And I get, there's a whole number, some even are authors of books who think they talk to Nostradamus. And they project, of course, their fantasies on the clouds of Nostradamus. But everyone who does this runs the danger of it. And so after a while, one has to be very humble with it, and one has to caution, like I will caution you all tonight, as I do in my books and articles, that
sure.
You know, you are probably going to see more of me in these prophecies than you will see in Nostradamus. But your reaction to what I say could also say something more about you and what you want to hear than what I'm actually saying, too. So we all are having, what the very least, the most practical thing that prophecy can teach us is how the human mind is predictable and repeats itself and is made to repeat itself and repeat history, and also how we are really filters of projection, that we taint everything we hear and see according to our culture, according to what we want to hear, according to what we don't want to hear. So this is where I believe the study of meditation often helps as a discipline to theoretically, that it's a discipline that allows you to observe the mind and the emotions, and in regards to that, kind of disassociate yourself somewhat from what you expect to see in the case of studying prophecy. So I think a discipline of self-observation is very helpful in the study of anything that deals with the paranormal, or frankly, a Zen master or a Zen teacher would tell you that anything you do in life, from the simple to the paranormal, can be better enhanced and clarified by being a witness.
Well, all that considered, though, John, I mean, yeah, how does one interpret the possibilities of a prediction of the shuttle disaster, for example?
Well, what happens is, and I can only go through the process that happened to me, with the understanding that I've even written in previous books that my sense was that the famous Mabus prophecy, which you quoted, which I'll repeat quickly again, Mabus will soon die. Then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. At once one will see vengeance, 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. Now, in earlier productions of books, I said that in the 80s, I thought, well, perhaps this person will surface when Halley's Comet appears in our skies. Then in 1997, when Hale-Bopp came, I figured, well, conventional wisdom would say that some major comet celestial event like that might also be getting us closer to a window.
Mm-hmm.
However, if one is open to something more metaphorical, when I watched the February 1st, the morning of February 1st, and saw this great falling star across the morning skies of Texas, and saw how it left a great comet-like trail before it broke up. And then when you consider, as we will in the coming hours in the show, how so many other elements about the third Antichrist's secret name seem to be at the point of being fulfilled, it's one of those epiphanies that one must have, for better or worse, in the prophetic business, where you click and go, oh, well, maybe it's not a comet in the literal sense, but something that a man in the 16th century, if he were looking to the future, if he was seeing millions of people, especially in America and in Israel and across the world, being struck by such a international tragedy, which is an important thing to understand, that Nostradamus is not dealing with minor things. Most of his prophecies deal with potentially fate-changing events.
Huge events.
You know, here we are standing at the brink of a war that may very well indeed, as we'll look further, trigger the Third World War, which has always been a very different war than the last two, a war of international terrorism that could last 27 years. And if this is about to happen, is something in the sky, being a 16th century man who is sensitive to, he's very accurately foretold eclipses and what would happen under them and great comet passages. This too was such a dramatic event, looking like a comet. I cannot say no to the possibility that he misread his symbols and thought that that was a comet falling from the skies.
Yes.
So when I saw it, I had an epiphany, looked back at the prophecy, things shifted, and at least I felt compelled in the bulletins that I write for people on my newsletter at my website to send out a study of this, saying that perhaps the comet, this is the comet of Mabus, and that we are months, days, weeks away from seeing not Napoleon, not Hitler, but the third and final threat to civilization appearing. And then the question is, exactly what will that be? Is it a man? Is it a thing? Is it more than one man as a composite? Now, this is sometimes what happens with Nostradamus, is that, to give an example, there are clear indications in his prophecies that I can see that show an invasion of France in the 20th century, even describing from the direction it'll come, through Flanders, through the forests of the Ardennes and others. But if you look at it, it's a jumble. And it remained a jumble for me, and the details of maneuvering armies and other things, until I realized that, oh, what if he's getting two events caught up in a time traffic jam?
Almost mixed up or caught up? Big difference.
Well, mixed together, like a traffic jam. He's seeing, if you were looking down the future and suddenly you're seeing a whole bunch of things piling up, and you read it as one thing, and it's actually two invasions. Well, if you look at that, and then you see the lines again, and know that certain movements happened in World War II in 1940 when the Germans invaded, and then a generation earlier, the Imperial German troops made other things he's referencing to in his prophecies, you realize he's got the invasion of France as one invasion by Germany, and it's actually, he's mistaken the two world wars for one world war. In the same way, people can also be backed up. One or two people, two or three people can end up being one person. Imagine if right now, if you and I brought out our bowl of pungent herbs to replicate the Delphi Oracle sitting on her brass tripod in a trance over a pillar of mist.
I couldn't do it, Jim.
Yeah. Well, he used to create that in his room, a facsimile of that discipline, to look in the future. Imagine if you and I were to do that and see things 500 years from now, when they don't speak English anymore, when they don't even believe and have the same values that we have. Some of the values will be better than ours, some will be more stranger. How do we express that? How do we interpret that in our conditioned minds from this early 21st century?
Well
said. This is what Nostradamus had to do.
Exactly, had to fight through that.
Yes. And one has to bring into that the man's failures as a human being to see vast things in the future. One has to also see that each of his antichrists gets foggier looking. It's a little harder for him to grasp as he goes farther into time, to understand things in our times, because they're so alien to man of the 16th century. So these are the things, and since we're going to spend, which is wonderful you're allowing me to take the time for the rest of the show to really just look at this one aspect of this one important aspect.
Well, it's important. It's critical, I think.
So that we can take really the time to ease into first Nostradamus' limitations in looking at it, and then also we have to start looking at our own limitations in interpreting it, what he saw. Because one thing, it's something I've noticed after 30 years of this, is that when things were far away, when events in prophecy seemed 25, 30 years away, you will find so many more people were interested in it. It was more entertainment than, and there was a lot of interest. But when an event starts to come close, when actual signs of the event are upon us, a lot of people fall, of course, into a natural fear of what's coming. And out of fear, people sometimes react to some of the possibilities that this prophecy could mean. And it's important as we all journey tonight into this, is to remember that the closer we come to a thing, not only are we going to start to see perhaps what it is that he's saying, but we may not, our programming, our expectations may not want to let in what he's saying, because it may go against what we want to see.
Well, that's possible. Let me ask you this very quickly, John, before we hit the break. Are you familiar with a name called Maitreya, by any chance?
Yes. I did a book called Messiahs, the Visions and Prophecies for the Second Coming, which looked at the 33 major and minor apocalyptic traditions that look at the question of over 33 messiahs that are coming to save the world. The book tries to look at the usual icons. It's a bit iconoclastic at first, and then finally kind of puts that all aside, the expectations of all these different religions, and then kind of asks, well, if we could just move those expectations aside and see it again, is there something coming? Is it a messiah or is it a phenomenon? And certainly Maitreya, or many claimants, there are as many claimants to Maitreya today as there were claimants to Emmanuel.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that when we come back. And also really now dive into some of the thoughts of Nostradamus, because it's coming. Let me tell you, it's coming. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John, are we in some really tough times right now? And don't hold back. Tell me the way you think you see it.
We have entered the travail that was, in the case of Nostradamus, was pinpointed for some time around the year 1999. In the seventh month of 1999, or the way you could read the coded French, it could also mean 1999 plus 7 months. So it's either July of 1999 or July of 2000, or shortly after that time, some major shakeups in the world would happen. He also talked not only about 1999, but a very important eclipse. And this is the man who got the eclipse right in his own time about the death of his king the following year, which precipitated much of French history that he talks about in his prophecies.
That's when the lance went through his right through his helmet or something, got him in the face? Yeah.
Yes. The young lion will face the old in single combat, which is ritual combat. And he shall pierce his eyes with through a gilded cage. Two wounds made one. The king dies a cruel death. That was written in 1554 when the first edition of Nostradamus came out in May of 1555. One of the first people to read it was the queen, Catherine Medici, because all books in those days that were printed in France, the publishers always sent a copy to the royal libraries, often before they even came out to the rest of the country.
Courtesy or pre-approval?
Yes, it was for the privilege. There was a special stamp of privilege and censorship as well, that any book that was published in the land had to be overseen by the king or people appointed by the king or queen. And since Catherine de' Medici was very much a scholar of the occult and had her own gift of second sight in many cases, although not always using them to proper effect, was one of the first people that would have read this book, and she would have not only seen this prophecy about jousting, but she also saw one about her seven children, which were indirectly mentioned as the seven children, and the line of the Valois basically will be extinguished. And the reason why she would look at the issue of, you know, if you just read this prophecy, well, yeah, a young lion fighting an old sounds like a documentary about Africa. You know, what does this have to do with anything? Well, what it has to do with it is that the king had a lion embossed on his shield. The king wore a gilded visor, although there's been some dispute towards that. The lance did pierce his eye and his forehead. And the infection from the wound became one wound. The two wounds became one and an abscess in his brain, and he died in agony 10 days later. He died a cruel death. There was also another prophecy that talked about in the year of the one-eyed king, there would be the court would be thrown to great double doubt. Now, there has never been, up to the time of Henry II of France in 1559, there has never been a king with one eye on the throne of France.
Right.
And for the next 230-some years that there still remain kings on the throne of France, there would never be a king with one eye. So this is about him. And many people saw that. And also because Catherine de' Medici had received from another astrologer in Florence a very similar prediction prior to Nostradamus's, talking about how her husband should never partake in a ritual combat in his 41st year because his astrology showed that he could suffer blindness or a head blow that would cause death. And then when the two wounds made one, she sees that prophecy and she summons Nostradamus to explain himself. And he went all the way to court to explain this to her and the king. And essentially, he left the audience with his head on his shoulders, so he obviously described some other prophecies that are also in his book, which talked about the king not dying of a joust and having an alternative future. A future where he ends up uniting the people of France as a second Charlemagne, who was the great king who united and expanded France across Europe in the early medieval times. Now, he didn't fulfill that destiny. He died in a jousting accident in his 41st year from a head wound. What a lot of people don't understand is what went to, I'm kind of doing this preamble for a reason, and that is that we're kind of almost like Catherine de' Medici and the king and Nostradamus. We're all sitting together looking at something that may or may not happen in the near future. And in a similar way, we're looking at what seem to be foggy, strange prophecies, and we're going to try to pick the right course to take by using these prophecies, considering who Mabus is, how he might be stopped. And if he can't be stopped, at least we can recognize him and prepare for the blow.
Mm.
So that is, it doesn't change whether this is 1555 and we're sitting in the court of France, or we are sitting here on Coast to Coast AM across North America and the world, sitting here and thinking, well, what's coming next? It's as significant for us and the world what the next few weeks bring, because as the death of the king set France on a course that was of a million dead in 40 years and a ruinous civil war, nine civil wars, could have been avoided. And the things that we are about to do, if we're not careful, could set in motion, which I'll get in more detail in a moment, a 27-year war of the third Antichrist.
27 that, years?
27 years. And it's the thing that is, as I'll read this prophecy, the thing to watch is that the death of the person we see in front of us, who is an irritant, is not the end, but something that happens because of this overthrow of this character, this third Antichrist, actually triggers the war.
Oh my.
It is something that we are in a position now to, in our short-sighted need to end something repugnant to us, may actually give birth to something 10 times worse by rushing ahead into it. That is one potential in these prophecies, and there are two that are the most famous prophecies concerning the third Antichrist. And the first I will read again. This is Quatrain 62 of Century 2. By the way, if you ever see a Nostradamus prophecy anywhere, and if it doesn't have its verse and chapter numbers, it's a fraud.
Ah, okay. It's good that you said that, John, because I do believe you and I talked right after 9/11, and there were a lot of verses going out. There were a lot of phrases going out without those verses.
And not only that, people were mixing the phrases and making up tying in phrases, so that in people's memories who had read something of this before in the real verses would go, yeah, I kind of remember that. And two towers and the city of York, well, I don't quite remember that, but wow, I do remember the Hollow Mountains falling and all that. Well, the Hollow Mountains were actually foreseen. The city of York doesn't exist in Nostradamia, because if you're a charlatan, you would definitely not want to put a number next to it, because you can verify anything in the old French. So it's ironic that even in Nostradamus' day, as soon as his prophecies started hitting, when he started mentioning the actual disaster of the San Quentin, which was this huge military disaster, which was like the French Stalingrad for those days. It almost ended the French kingdom in their wars with the Habsburgs. And he actually named the fortress that would be overthrown 2 years before it was overthrown. Enough people saw that to realize, wow, there's something going on here. And, of course, the excitement of that also brought that shadowy bunch of people that always come into the situation, who are wags and charlatans who want to create fake prophecies. And there were fake prophecies of Nostradamus flowing around as much as his authentic ones. And he almost was put in prison because of the fake ones, saying things that he never said, fraudulent things. So anyway.
Well, if I'm reading you correctly, from your interpretation, it sounds like if we topple Saddam Hussein, now this is my impression, you tell me if I'm wrong, if we topple Saddam Hussein, we're into this 27-year problem.
This is one option, but there's others.
Ah.
So hold that thought, everyone.
Okay.
And let us look at these two prophecies, because there's a couple of possibilities. Remember I said that Mabus could be one person, or it could be a mistake of Nostradamus seeing two people so intertwined in one destiny that they seem to him to be the same person. Or he's playing a trick with us in his codes, and he actually is meaning two persons who trigger something, two people who are the two dimensions of a catalyst, a catalytic event that creates this war. Now, that's also possible, but what I'm going to, let us not hold an opinion for or against anything, because we're trying to see if it may indeed be the right thing to go right now into war and stop this thing before it happens. Or it may be the cause of something far worse. Let us leave it at that at this moment, and now look at the prophecy. So there's two prophecies. I'll read it once again. Quatrain 62, Century 2 is, Mabus will soon die, then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. At once one will see vengeance, 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. Now the second
prophecy... Now the comet could be the space shuttle?
Could be something falling out of the sky that looks like a comet, or there are a number of people out there that have been sending me hundreds of emails concerning the comet that is currently very close to the sun right now. And I want to say that even though Soho might see it, I'm thinking that in Nostradamus' 16th century mindset, it has to be something at least big and dramatic in our skies, not a comet that's so close to the sun that no one really can see it unless you've got binoculars and you're in the southern hemisphere and you're in some remote part of Australia. That as much one has to understand that what we, if it's got to be something big in the sky that everybody can see, like Hale-Bopp, like the comet Halley, and perhaps something that looks like a comet, even a missile streaking through the sky, a fire trailing a trail of sparks.
What about an asteroid that hasn't even passed by us yet?
Exactly. These one has to stay open-minded to all these possibilities. It does, in my mind, bring warning signals when we are at the verge of a major conflict in the Middle East, which has unforeseen potentials to change the region, make things better or worse. And here's this tremendous, almost operatic tragedy of the very people, the very president over his very home state. That the irony of that this almost something you would expect out of a 16th, 17th century drama of Shakespeare, Nostradamus' near contemporary, something that a 16th century man, because of its drama, would have noticed. That is my interpretation. Now, what's important with the Mabus prophecy is to listen to the similarities in these two prophecies concerning the third Antichrist and Mabus. Now,
I do have to say one thing. I just want to get this out of the way.
Sure.
The former U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia was Raymond E. Mabus.
Yes. Yes. The poor man. It is interesting.
Same spelling.
It's exactly the same spelling. I know I've had thousands of emails about it over the last 10 years, and I've even written about it in books saying, look, that's something to consider. However, if it's him, there, as these prophecies show, there's very clear things that has to happen, which didn't happen, fortunately, for Mr. Mabus, our ambassador. He has to soon die.
What's he doing now?
Well, he's retired.
I know that, but I mean,
he's retired life, you know, because I've also been tracking.
He was a former governor of Mississippi, I think.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, yeah. And fortunately, except for the unfortunate coincidence of having the name, he
poor guy ends up in Nostradamus' quatrains.
I want to say, rest it, everybody. It's the man is enjoying a good life and has nothing to do with this, and because Mabus is as far as this prophecy is soon dies, and then something horrible, destruction of people and animals follows forth, and that has nothing to do with him. So the third Antichrist prophecy, which is Quatrain 77 of Century 8, starts, the third Antichrist very soon annihilated. 27 years his bloody war will last. The heretics are dead, the captives exiled, blood-soaked human bodies, and a reddened, icy hail covering the earth. It's one of the most horrific of Nostradamus' prophecies, and it has parallels to the Mabus prophecy. Let me read some of those the lines of
either
one.
Yes, please, John, because I find this to be incredibly fascinating.
Well, it is. You have Mabus will soon die, then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. In the next prophecy, you have the third Antichrist, very soon annihilated. Same theme, little variation on the theme. And usually Nostradamus...
Now, is Mabus the Antichrist, or is that someone different?
We're getting to that. He could be another person. He could be the one who kills the Antichrist, who annihilates the Antichrist. Or he's the same person. This is the thing that on this side of the event is difficult for us, if we're honest, to say absolutely.
Okay.
So, 27 years his bloody war will last, and he's very soon annihilated. Now, it's almost, to me, if it's the same man, and often Nostradamus will use two quatrains, two four-line prophecies that he scattered throughout the less than 1,000 predictions that he had in his book. And it's you have to kind of be sensitive to those word links that make it, that piece together a puzzle piece way over here and puts it close beside this. I mean, this is, the first one is from the second volume. The second, that seems to be a part of the same story, is from the eighth volume of the same book of prophecies. You have Mabus will soon die, and then the destruction of animals is the link to the third Antichrist, very soon annihilated. 27 years his bloody war will last. And then the final two lines, these horrific lines about heretics are dead, exiles captive, blood-soaked human bodies, and red and icy hail covering the earth. This is a period. This is a moment where Nostradamus is going into one of his pictorial attempts to describe something that in the magical rite he was being shown.
Is he describing the apocalypse here? Armageddon?
Well, what he's describing literally is it, in the first and literal sense, then we'll go more poetic and metaphorical, is he's seeing an image of heaped bodies, blood-soaked, strangely covered by icy hail. Is this really icy hail? Is it a nuclear winter? Is when he says Earth, he leaves it open to it being the whole Earth, or just the earth where these bodies are lying.
Right.
It's not made clear in the prophecy whether he means, he's talking about some form of nuclear autumn, which is because we don't blow off as many atomic weapons after the Cold War, but we still cause the climate to cool down. Or he's just talking about a terrible, horrific sight that could be the Kurdish village in northern Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Look
mm-hmm.
at pictures of the people that are killed by chemical weapons. They're often stained in the red chemicals, or it looks like they've been snowed on by something. And in a 16th century term, he might be looking at that and trying to explain, again, like if we were trying to explain something 500 years from now that we people then would take for granted. Imagine chemical weapons, biological weapons, he wouldn't understand what that is. I think here he's trying to explain in his own mind what this is. And what I gather from these two prophecies is, let's look at the idea that, okay, if it's one man, we'll look at the couple scenarios. If it's one man, if it's two men, if it's a man, the scenarios are one man, two men, one man who destroys the other man and is also destroyed.
All right, hold that thought, because we're going to come right back from this break, John, and I do want to get into that, whether it is one man or two men, two different names. And I got to tell everybody that during this interview with John Hoag, I've been writing the name Mabus, and I've been trying to figure out who it might be or if it's a combination of two. And it's kind of scary, because I think you've been doing the same thing, and we're coming up with the same results. Let's find out if John Hoag is as well. I don't like it. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
John Hogue, my guest, and again, you can get to his website, hogueprophecy.com, by simply going to coasttocoastam.com and just click it right on under tonight's guest. All right, John, before the break, we were talking about Mabus being either one man or two. I'll let you take it away. Go ahead.
All right. Well, what we need to do now is perhaps look at some of the possible ways that we can use the laws of anagram, wordplay, that were so prevalent in Nostradamus' day, to decode what M-A-B-U-S means. The important thing, and maybe we can crunch some contemporary names out of it.
All right.
Now, it's important to do it first in lowercase, because of one of the rules of anagramming is that if you can turn a word around, reverse a word,
mm-hmm.
or reverse a letter to make another letter, you can do that. The anagrams that Nostradamus used also allowed you to add or subtract redundancies in something you would do, and you can replace one vowel with another only once. So, with that in mind, if you write M-A-B-U-S, one of the first things that comes up is you can also extract any letters that you need that are superfluous. If you take out the first and last letter, you get the appellation Abu. Abu means father in Arabic.
Yes.
It is often used as a code, has been used for ever since 72-73 when terrorism became prevalent for secular as well as religious terrorist organizations in the Middle East. Abu Nidal, Abu Abbas, Mabus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These were candidates, and they were candidates in my earlier books, because one of the things I try to do in my books, I am not trying to predict a rigid future. Some people who have a problem with my work try to cram me up at a conclusion that my work is about seeing events in the future and getting them rigidly accurate. What my work really is to help educate you to look at all the possibilities born in quantum futures out of this living moment. So I can make one assured prediction that my books will constantly change and constantly give you new opportunities to look at what is born out of this moment. So with that said, in the earlier days, Abu Nidal, Abu Abbas seemed to come up as important candidates. It turned out that they are not. The other intriguing thing about Abu is that if you look at the code name in the Palestinian Liberation Organization for Yasser Arafat, he used to be called Abu Ammar. Now, when you spell that out, A-B-U, new word, A-M-A-R, there's the M, there's two double A's, which you
mm-hmm.
can make to one, there's the B, and the U, and the only thing that's missing is the S.
The S, right.
So, if, with that in mind, if something were to happen, which nearly happened in the last year in two cases, where the Palestinian leader, if he had been killed when he had been isolated into his compound, and if that had triggered a revenge of 100 hands across the Middle East, you could have said that Mabus soon dying was Abu Ammar, Yasser Arafat, triggering a war that brings an Armageddon-like situation in the Middle East. One could say that. One may still say that. We have to see. Now, another way to look at Mabus is using mirroring. You can use a mirror to do it, but you can also just reverse. M-A-B-U-S becomes S-U-B-A-M. In lower case, you can reverse the B into a D, S-U-D-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
You can replace one vowel, S-A-D-A-M. And if you have redundancies, you can increase or subtract. So you can now take the D and spell S-A-D-D-A-M. There's Saddam Hussein.
Right there.
Now, for many years now, I have been arguing as this fortunes and fate change, and I still hold that he is the highest candidate. I've been saying that since 87, and I still hold to it, that he remains the highest candidate for, in my mind, in my interpretation, for Mabus.
What about Osama?
Now, let us look at Osama. Now, it's important with Arabic that you we have to look at how we mispronounce in America, words and countries' names. For instance, the habit of saying Iraq is as bad as saying America.
Mm-hmm.
It is the actual correct pronunciation is not Osama, like Iraq. It is Usama.
Usama.
Usama, like that. And so, phonetically, since it's Arabic name, and we're putting it in phonetics, U-S-A-M-A, and then the B from Bin Laden. If you spell that out, there's the M, two A's, U-S, and the B to the side. You get M, you get mouse B, M-A-A-U-S. Replace one vowel, extraneous vowel, with the B, you get Mabus.
Yes, you do. Shows
and
up.
It's intriguing about that one, because if we look back at the third Antichrist prophecy, there one of the lines, the horrific lines, line 3, talks about the heretics are dead. He talks about them as heretics, infidels. Are they heretics of true Islam or heretics of Christianity? We don't know, but they're heretics. They are exiled captives. They're soon dead. I've been writing for years now that sound like these people are being hunted down and put in distant prisons and all of that, and then now we have Camp X-Ray in Guantanamo Bay with several hundred Al-Qaeda in it. We have people hunted down. The heretics are dead here and there. It sounds like the hunt for a terrorist organization. So that is that my shape on the cloud of Nostradamus? We don't know. Events will show whether that fits or not.
Now, if it's two people, what are the possibilities? And I do not believe, and I will say this categorically, that I do not believe George Bush is the Antichrist, for crying out loud. But what if his name is interlocked with Saddam or Osama in this kind of prophecy?
It's very possible. As a scholar beyond my own programming as an American, I would find it also very repugnant to consider my president to be Nostradamus' third Antichrist.
Right, I would too.
However, my opinions and projections in the face of eternity's potentials is irrelevant. I say that as a scholar, not as an American, but as a professional scholar in this field, I have to face that is also a possibility, as repugnant as it may be to us.
Well, and we are looking at possibilities, and that's the important thing here. You're not pointing fingers.
No. And it's also very intriguing to also argue that they are two dimensions of the same catalytic event, two forces of destiny and nature colliding to create something else. That is also very possible.
Yes.
That is also seen clearly in their astrology. There's astrologers who have been helping me over the months looking at these things, doing transit, and from layman's terms, it's very complex stuff, but in layman's terms, what the bottom line is, these two people have a destiny. They are like glue.
Absolutely, John.
They are
absolutely
forces of nature in collision. And so that, in astrological predictive terms, makes the argument that Mabus is actually fighting the third Antichrist a possibility. But again, if that's a possibility, there are at least some things, at least in this interpretation, that I have to be clearly fulfilled for that to be proven right. And unfortunately, what that means is these two forces of nature, these two leaders, these two presidents of different countries must both soon expire in the conflagration they're involved with, which is a terrible thing to say, but it's something for the record that has to be considered so that it can be avoided. This is one thing we have to see. Now, if that doesn't happen, then we've got, fortunately, the wrong interpretation here.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
or the wrong people.
Yes. Very possible. If war does not happen between the new moon of March, which is early March, 2nd to the 9th, when it's in its first quarter, and if it doesn't happen in April, on April Fool's Day to the 10th of April, this is the window, the best windows for the moon's phases for any attack. And since this, if there were an attack, dark nights after midnight, you would think it would happen like the first Gulf War did, after midnight, around 2-3 o'clock in the morning, when there's no moon. And those are the windows. And this is not prophecy here. This is just looking at an ephemeris and looking at what's going on with the phases of the moon. If one were to educate a guess that attacks would happen, and if politics prevented the war from happening now, soon, and happening another month, you're looking at the 2nd to the 10th of March, the 1st and the 9th of April, as the windows for this war.
Let me ask you this, John, because I've just noticed this looking at part of your website. Nostradamus. If you take the little D, turn it into a B, and then rearrange the letters, you've also got Mabus.
You also have Magus, because that is another... Yeah, that's true. But since he didn't soon die and was not destroyed, and his death didn't cause a great destruction of people and animals, and there was no record of icy hail or anything of that nature, clearly that he wasn't talking about himself. But I don't rule that out. I mean, you look at all possibilities that it's some terrible practical joke as well, and I didn't look at that, and it doesn't fit with the other elements. However, with the argument that these two forces of political nature may be colliding, two concepts of culture, religion, whatever, are colliding in this war, if Mabus then is the president, it's a very interesting and very easy anagram that comes from this. Remember, you can reverse letters. First, take the B-U-S out of Mabus. There's B-U-S. All we're missing is the H. M-A turned upside down in lowercase, and this is a trick in anagrams, becomes G-W.
Yeah, it does.
That means you have the silent Latin H, which he often, like with Hister, used or didn't use for his play on Hitler. And you have now the name very easily, and actually more like the way the other two anagrams for the other two figures were relatively easy anagrams to decode. You have that. Now, I'm not saying that means he's a third Antichrist. I'm simply saying that it is a very easy anagram to make. Does that mean because it's easy that it's the right anagram to make? Again, if it is, and if Nostradamus is seeing it right, then unfortunately this war will claim both leaders soon in the opening phases. If it isn't, then Mabus, if, for instance, the war happens, and as I've been interpreting Nostradamus and several other prophecies over the years, saying that probably Saddam Hussein's fate will be to die in a bunker buster bomb, because of some of the things that we might go into later that seem to indicate that, then if he soon dies, then Mabus is the third Antichrist. It is Saddam, and Bush has put an end to him. But
that's not the end of this.
That's the beginning,
yep,
of the problem. And you've got to wonder, with the problems beyond our immediate difficulty with this tyrant and what he's doing to his people and what he's hiding in his deserts, there are the far-reaching ramifications that are we, by boxing him, letting time... You know, he's going to be 66 in May,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying. Dictators don't usually live long. Is there another history that could happen out of this moment where if we don't go to war, he's overthrown anyway? Or if we rush to war, are we throwing gasoline on the fire we have boxed in for 12 years and set the whole Middle East and Islamic world on fire?
John, what do you think the players in this arena would say about what you're talking about tonight? I mean, would they laugh at you? Would they say this is prophecy? This is our destiny? What do you think they'd say?
I think they would do all of them. There's also a lot of people at this very moment that are very angry at what I've just said, because I get their emails. I don't take their anger because it's not my problem, their anger. But I am simply stating a thing, and if it's upsetting to people, look at what you expected to be. I mean, when I get angry at something, meditation teaches me that it's because I have an expectation for things to be a certain way, and whatever somebody said or did goes against what I want things to be. Now, rather than see that I want something to be a certain way, I dump it on the person who gave me the message. Now if that person's wrong, too bad for him. You know, if saying a wrong prediction and it's a very gross error in Nostradamus, I'd be very happy to say that if this all doesn't happen, I'd be very, very happy. But how one takes this interpretation, if one gets violently angry or if one laughs or whatever one does, that is the responsibility of the person receiving it, not the person sending it. I'm saying that because from past experience when I make these statements, there will be millions of people tonight who will say, wow, right on, John, you got it right. And of course, because there's something about what I'm saying that fits their biases to support what I'm saying.
Sure.
And equally, I will get people who say, you are a fraud, you're terrible, how un-American, all of the expletives you can imagine, because I didn't fulfill their expectations. Your expectations are not my problem. They're your problem. Whether you support me or not is not the point. What is the point is to see if we can see things in these possibilities to change our actions today to make a better future.
Well, and that brings this question up. Prophecies of the quatrains, can they be changed? Because it appears that all the past ones have already occurred and nobody changed them. So what makes you think, John, we can change them?
Well, because actually that's not true. We certainly can focus on how, wow, you know, there are hundreds of predictions that seem to have been fulfilled, but there's almost 1,000 predictions that have not been fulfilled. And they seem to look like they were going somewhere. For instance, all the 16 prophecies about the great King Hercules, the great Chiron Ceylon, which is clearly an anagram for Henry, because Chiron in old French, Latinized French, is Henrik, which is Henry. And everybody in Nostradamus' time knew that when he called his king Chiron Ceylon, Ceylon from Selene, Greek for the moon, he was using the monogram of the king, which was his H, with the crescent, the Selene, of his mistress, Diane de Poitiers. And everybody knew that that looks like gobbledygook to us, but everybody in his time knew who he was talking about. And none of those prophecies were fulfilled.
What's his accuracy?
Because he said he was going to also be killed in a jousting accident. So the future went a different way, and suddenly all these prophecies that we look at now in this future line of time that seem to make sense, and hundreds that don't now, if he had gone the other way, maybe all the famous prophecies that Nostradamus' sympathetic biographers and people indicate as signs of how great his prediction abilities were would be all obscure to us now, because another timeline would have been opened.
But what you're saying, John, is he was not right all the time.
Well, you cannot be right about the future all the time. It's impossible, because the future is alive. It's a dynamic echo to what we do in the present. It is not written in stone. One of the deepest programs that people in all religious contexts have about prophecy, and it's a program. It's not, is my experience over 30 years of studying different religions and different prophetic traditions. There's such a hypnotism that people have that says if you make predictions, they're accurate. They're fixed. And the future is not fixed. It's as many future potentials as possible in your actions if you change them this moment.
All right, stay with us. Lots more to come. And boy, this night is just flying by. We'll also open up the phone lines and see if we can get a few of you in tonight to ask John a question or two. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And welcome back to Coast, John Hogue, my guest. John, how will we ever really know if your interpretations are correct? Do we have to wait and see if this stuff unfolds?
I am convinced that if my interpretation is correct, then we are between 2 months to a year from knowing who the third Antichrist, or who is intertwined with the third Antichrist, is who they are. Is Mabus the third Antichrist? Is Mabus a person who attacks the third Antichrist?
Mm-hmm.
Is are they one and the same person? Or even has Nostradamus gotten it wrong and he's actually seen his one person is actually two people?
Maybe three?
No. I think because of one simple thing. If this interpretation, big if this interpretation is correct, then the third Antichrist is very soon annihilated, soon dies, as the two prophecies say, and then a much worse situation arises from the consequences of this action. Then, and I think if there's war, and if we go in the next few weeks, or by as late as April, go in, and one has to wonder, with the unforeseen, and even I would say ill-conceived plans for post-Saddam, the potentials that could happen in the Middle East from it, whether this is all out of hot air in the Middle East, that this is going to derail nations and cause things to be worse. On this side of destiny, we don't know. But it certainly, some people will take this interpretation and use it to stamp out the snake, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And other people will take my interpretation and say, we shouldn't go to war now. That perhaps we should keep him in his box and let other events
unfold.
His own overthrow, his death from illness. He had an illness last year. And, some people would argue that when you could put a 250,000 Americans in harm's way, in a war that would probably see us there for a couple years of occupation, rebuilding an entire country when our own economy is bad, with the potential of Saudi Arabia and Egypt collapsing into Islamic states because of it, in a cost of $100 billion to $150 billion a year in war and occupation, opposed to having 150 inspectors keeping them in a box for $70 million a year, one wonders. One wonders also if a war would be better if it was fought a year from now with the entire world behind us, or if we have to go alone, which seems to be more at this moment the way it will be.
Well, as a matter of fact, even Canada said today that if we have to go at alone, they won't participate.
Now, it's a... there are other factors that remind me of what we were talking a few hours ago about repetition of history. There are a lot of things that about this new 21st century war that remind me of the similar unknowns and theories that people had in August of 1914, when after a long period of time, no major conflict had happened in Europe, and even though the governments of Europe still applied Napoleonic shoulder-to-shoulder marching tactics in conflicts, where they still believed the bayonet was all you needed to win on the battlefield, no one knew the impact of the rapid-fire rifles and machine guns that had evolved since Napoleonic times. And they had some very nasty surprises when they went into that first modern war. The French on the frontiers of Belgium lost 300,000 casualties in the first week of the war and had to stop their offensive. Now, we have a similar thing here. No one really knows the impact of chemical and biological weapons on the battlefield, and certainly they will be used because he certainly has them. No one knows the impact of how that will disrupt, if it disrupts at all, our occupation of the region, our attack. This is very, so we're marching into a lot of unknowns there is not a whole lot being thought about the years that are coming and the amount of cost that it will pay to rebuild, which will obviously happen. The infrastructure of Iraq will be destroyed.
Well, and I'm more concerned, John, about the 27-year war that follows than what might happen in the next few months.
I have been saying that whatever happens to Mabus, his death will be, I've been writing this, people have read my works, know this, that I've been saying that my sense is that whoever he is, and if he soon dies, he will become the Remember the Alamo for a faction of people in the world who will fight for a generation, calling his name, calling his martyrdom, whether it is our president or whether it is an Arab prince, as he calls him sometimes, or a leader or tyrant. The thing that's also I want to read to you is an important couple prophecies that may give us some idea of the post-Saddam Iraq or the war that's coming.
All right, do that, and then we'll take some calls. Go ahead, John.
Quatrain 70 of Century 8 says, he will enter, wicked, unpleasant, infamous, tyrannizing over Mesopotamia. That is the old name for Iraq. All friends made by the adulterous lady, the land dreadful and black in aspect. Now, when the first Gulf War happened, I thought, well, that is interesting to me that he sees the land blackened. And I thought, well, that's the Kuwaiti oil fields. The apocalyptic nature of the post-Gulf War
right.
of 91. The problem is in the syntax of the prophecy, you would say that Sodom is already there. You could also argue that it's somebody else entering Mesopotamia. Unfortunately, that could as much mean the people who are invading Iraq now create a situation where the land is fearsome and black in aspect because the invasion triggers the demolition of the second largest oil processing and oil drilling fields in the world. And then all of Iraq is black in aspect. Not because we were bad, because we went in, but because this act triggers other acts, which then triggers the domino effect of 27 years of this. So it's a point that we're at right now that people of Europe were at in 1914. Do we let some little idiot fire a gun, kill somebody, as what happened in 1914, and assassinated the Archduke of Austria? And because of all the armaments and all the treaties, everybody just hastily rushed into a war which destroyed 1,000 years of monarchic Europe and brought us into the times that actually set the stage for Adolf Hitler to arise in another generation.
Which created more problems.
Some historians call World War One and Two the second German 30 Years' War, with a long armistice of 20 years between the first violent and last violent 4 and 6 year periods that began the conflict. I see patterns that show us repeating that again. And now we do it in the Middle East. Another strange pattern, which is one of the great ironies of predictable history in the future, is that there are 30-year cycles and 80-year cycles as well. And I find it very ironic that a Texas president over 30 years ago got in a war that was not conceived the instance that caused the war in the Gulf of Tonkin was not really argued as a confirmed incident, and yet America got dragged into a war where the country divided and marched in the streets for and against it, and that president's presidency was derailed by a war that consumed him. He was also from Texas. He was of the opposite camp politically. Isn't it strange that all these things are lining up again, for a Texan president, in an ill-conceived, perhaps, many people argue that the evidence has not been brought forth clearly, objectively, that there are reasons to go to war now, rather than next year, rather than some other time. It's a pattern that I can't help but acknowledge is there, the danger is there. And I'm not saying that it is wrong to go, but it is a little eerie to see the repetition. Are we going now from jungle quagmires to sand quagmires in a second Vietnam?
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with John Hogue on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good, good. Thank you.
You have a great show, and you keep me riveted every night. I had one quick comment.
Sure.
And I just wanted to say, like, I've seen a lot of programs on the opposite side of all this. You know, like, everything can be proven wrong going the other way. Everything can be proven to be too vague or whatever. But don't you think it's very important that people in the society we live in today, that everyone thinks nothing bad can happen to us, and you know, that we're going to be here for a million years? Isn't it important, even if everything here that we've talked, that I've listened to you talk about tonight, is false? Isn't it important to kind of take a lesson from that, like a fable, like you take from a fable, that human life is so precious and so delicate, and that, you know, any of these tragedies can fall upon us? But don't you think maybe we just took a second step back and just learned a lesson from these predictions that,
well,
maybe...
Well, I think I get the gist of what you're saying, and the thing is that the prophecy is basically one of the things it is, as I see it, is a glimpse into future history. There's indications in prophecy that at the very least, are whether these interpretations are right or wrong, in this present living moment, we are all now pausing and reflecting. Who are listening to the show or on the show, we're all pausing and reflecting and thinking, well, here's what happened in the past. There's indications that showing we're repeating ourselves again. Those wars didn't work for us in the past. War may be unavoidable now, but it's possible that we're having once again a situation where the people who have learned their lessons from history are pitted against the people who are yet to learn their lessons from history. And whether they are citizens or leaders, this is really the issue before them. You know, I can feel sympathy for the French foreign minister saying, yes, indeed, we are old Europe. Because old Europe lost millions in World War I, millions in World War II. And the Russians even can pause before going to war, because in 4 years of Operation Barbarossa and the rest of the Eastern Front, they lost 27 million people fighting the Nazis in 4 years.
That probably doesn't include what Stalin killed off in his own population.
And the thing that's people overlook in their hyperbole is that Saddam Hussein sees himself as a new Stalin, not a new Hitler, and he certainly resembles Stalin much more than Hitler. Strange thing about Hitler and Stalin, a great historian named Bullock did a comparison of the two, and he said the thing about history is that everything Hitler said, everybody thought was a lie, and he was always telling the truth. He said he was going to invade, he was going to kill the Jews, he was going to invade the Russians, he was going to this and that. Everybody thought he was just talking trash. Whereas Stalin, everybody believed Stalin said, and he was almost always lying about policy. And perhaps Saddam Hussein is a shadow of that, too. He's certainly a liar, like Stalin. And we contained Stalin and the Soviet Union. We didn't go to thermonuclear war to put an end to that repugnant person and his repugnant society. Perhaps the lesson is, with this new littler Stalin, we should also keep the strategy of containment, because eventually time works against tyrants.
It always does. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, sir.
I just have a couple questions.
Sure.
I read a book back when I was in high school, I'd say in 97, and it was before all the quatrains got doctored and so forth, like you were talking about earlier. His years were by the planets. Is that how he did it, or the stars?
Well, doctored. there are a couple things that are a little general in what you're saying. I mean, I think I get the gist of it, but yes, he certainly, he dated things. He certainly, one of the things that he tried to do is he believed that there was a kind of an internal recurrence, that certain astrological configurations that repeat themselves over the centuries often saw similar events repeat themselves again. And I've also experimented with that concept in judicial astrology, and in my experiments I found that to be true. 70% of the time, if you have certain same aspects that followed certain important moments in history, they repeat themselves. Now the key is the devil is still in how you interpret it. A colleague of mine, Le Masurier, did something very bold. He tried to use that system to predict what he thought was a conventional Islamic invasion by fleets and by armies, that according to these designs, he had Islamic armies basically invading and occupying Italy by now and approaching Provence, France, and actually taking over Europe. Now, in countering that, when he made that theory, I said, well, it seems to me that he's right about the time window of some war with the Middle East, but it's not actually something conventional. It's something where we're perhaps stuck in the Middle East, mm-hmm. as we are today. I think it was admirable of him to attempt the experiment and actually stick out his neck and be actually quite wrong, but I think his effort was good, that it also reveals that yes, these stars are there, but it still comes to how you interpret, how you project onto those stars what is going to happen. And if you're good at it, you're going to be about 70% accurate, and if you're not, you'll at least know where your biases lie.
Or maybe
my paper of Nostradamus's obscurity,
or maybe a little off, right?
Everything can be off. In fact, and beyond being off, if certain decisions, for instance, just hypothetically speaking, if for some reason this interpretation had some influence in stopping a war from happening, that could set in motion a lot of predictions that would be fulfilled in his prophecies that remain kind of obscure looking. And a lot of the predictions that would have gone down the road of the 27-year war of the Antichrist wouldn't happen. If Saddam Hussein doesn't die, and if our president doesn't die, and if there's no war in Iraq, then that either means that I made a wonderfully false error, and I'd be very happy about that, or history has changed. We changed it. Now we're going to go down a new line.
Or maybe this isn't the time period, John. Maybe it's 100 years from now or 1,000 years.
That is absolutely possible. Although I will say on the record that I don't think so. I think it's happening now. I would like to agree with you on that, but I will hold to it that we are now entering the time.
All right, stay with us. My guest is John Hoag. We're going to take more of your phone calls as we talk about the absolutely stunning prophecies of Nostradamus. I'm George Norrie. You're listening worldwide tonight to Coast AM. Potential arrival of what some say could be a Planet X in May. Might that also be a trigger here?
I'll go on the record and say that it is a complete non-event. As big a non-event as May 5th, 2000 was, which Art Bell and I did a show on just the day before, as big a non-event as the end of the world in 2000, and I will also predict as big a non-event as 2012 will be in the Mayan calendar. And all I can that's where I'm going on the record. If things are falling out of the sky, it's Scud missiles and other things more human that could cause disasters. It could be the disaster of war.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard caller, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Laura calling from Sherman Oaks.
Hello, Laura.
How are you?
Good.
I'm fascinated with this. It's been bugging me when I want to address your guest. I forgot his name. I'm sorry.
John Hogus is
now. Yeah. When I was in high school back in the early 40s, I'm quite old, I was hooked on Nostradamus, and I read about four different translations. Now, the last quatrain in one of the translations was, heaven and this has haunted me for years until something finally happened. The one of the last quatrains was, heaven and earth will meet, the dead will rise as from their graves, and the Asian hordes will march. Well, when we went to the moon, I figured, okay, that takes care of heaven and earth shall meet. Now I'm seeing the Asian, the dead will rise as from their graves, which could mean the militant Muslims, and the Asian hordes certainly are marching. Do you recall that quatrain?
As you're speaking, Laura, I am, first off, that is a bad translation, but there's parts of it that I remember, and I got lucky. My computer just prompted up quatrain 74 of Century 10, which is towards the end. It's one of your memory serves you right. It was towards the end of the 10 volumes of the centuries.
Right.
And I have before me the original French, so from my own translation of that, this is how that prophecy actually reads.
Okay.
The year the great seventh number is accomplished, appearing at the time of the games of slaughter, not far from the age of the great millennium, when the dead will come out of their graves. That's how it reads to me. And my interpretation from Nostradamus, the complete prophecies, which I entered in 1996, I said this about it. During the Second Gulf War, U.S. pilots talked about airstrikes as if they were plays in an American football game. In a quatrain set for a future time when people treat the ultimate human tragedy of war with new lows of banality, it is a promise of hope that mankind will transcend its ancient tomb of fossilized traditions that have sustained endless cycles of war and rape and be reborn into a new millennium of peace. The seventh number is the seventh millennium, the source of much contention and confusion amongst Nostradamus scholars, because the prophet counts us down to the date of doomsday or bloomsday with different starting dates. Either it comes in this millennium, or A.D. 3242, or even A.D. 3826. If before the year 2000 man can reject political power games in favor of a new awakening, the world may survive into the next millennium. That's what I wrote in 1996.
Well, the good part about what you've written, John, is it's already etched in stone. And if anything happens, we can go back and review it and take a look at it. First time caller, you're on the air with John Hogue on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. I'm Guy Ebert from Winnipeg. I'm sorry, Guy from Winnipeg.
Sure, go ahead.
And I'm listening with Chorus 680, CJOB. And I was wondering, he was talking about two people, and of course, like you, just a lot of scenarios came shooting through my head. And I was wondering, with Saddam Hussein and all his infinite number of doubles, what if somebody did take a shot at Saddam, and thinking that he hit the person, shot his double, and then Saddam re-erects himself as the savior and coming back from the head wound?
Oh, no, you know the problem with all of that, it is based on, well, we could do a whole show on this, is a big controversy. It's based on the book of Revelation. It's based on the idea that the Antichrist, in the biblical context, unlike Nostradamus's, which is a different view on it,
are they not similar at all?
Wounded and then rises from the head wound,
right?
To become the world leader, bringing a false peace in the world. Now the problem with that is how you translate the numeric prophecy of 666, number of the beast. Now, if I quote Revelation 13, verse 18, from the New English translation of the Bible, it says, St. John of Patmos, who wrote the book of Revelation, says, here is the key, and anyone who has intelligence may work out the number of the beast. The number responds to a man's name. It represents a man's name. And the numerical value of its letters is 666. Now, Hebrew letters, Arabic numbers came later before this was written. So letters in Hebrew also stand for numbers. 666 spells out a clear contemporary of St. John of Patmos. It spells out, in Hebrew, Nero Caesar. Now, if that is correct, then the prophecies, the whole hinge of the Book of Revelations is based on a failed prediction of 2,000 years ago of the imminent coming of the Antichrist and the return of Christ in the lifetime of St. John of Patmos, which did not happen.
So you're more apt to believe Nostradamus than the Book of Revelation?
Simply from the educated guess that he's closer to the event.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on with John Hogue. Hi.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling from Philadelphia, the WPHT, and I was listening to you and John trying to analyze the name Mubis to try to identify the Antichrist, and I thought, what if they're barking?
Hello?
Hello? Where'd you go?
I think
her phone went right at the end. She fell into one of those 3-foot snow cliffs there, and
probably yes, the snowdrift got the line.
Her phone has gone kaput. Well, I think what she may have been trying to say is the interpretation of the names and the spellings. But I think, John, you're pretty darn close to one of the three names that you brought up. And again, like you, I tend to think Saddam Hussein may be the name, the most prevalent name of that list.
And, well, if he will know, I think, in a month or two.
Yeah, it's coming down the pipe.
And if for some reason, for political or other reasons, or if our president really means what he says and war is the last option in his mind, then if he is willing to start the presidential campaign next year with us back to square one, with us thinking of going to war in the proper weather window next year, he maybe he'll have the whole world behind him, and that may still lead to the same mess. It's, you know, we don't have much time left, but you know, a lot of where to make a long story short, in the way things run and destinies run, there were many windows of opportunity that we've missed over the last 50 years that probably, if we had accessed them, we would not be at this position where it's almost come to a point where the momentum for this conflict can't be stopped, even by men of goodwill. It's almost got to play itself out.
Key phrase, momentum, and you may be absolutely right. It might not be able to be stopped.
And there have been mistakes made, historic mistakes made on both sides. Certainly, it reminds me again of 1914 when people of good intention tried to create such rock-solid alliances so that war wouldn't happen because it was unthinkable, because it would trigger this momentum. The war that nobody in Europe wanted came out of a simple incident of terror where the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, the heir apparent to the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, was shot. And out of that, within a few weeks, the entire European continent was at war. And nobody wanted it. But they could not help but follow the machinery of their predictability. And that, ultimately, is the most important lesson that I gain after 30 years of studying the future history of the world, is that we have to stop being so predictable. We have to find a way to not program each new generation of children to be as idiotic as we have been and will continue to be. The only way that's going to be broken is if people start taking a deep and humble look at how we robotically get ourselves into these messes.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How are you doing, George?
Good.
This is Mike calling from Fontana, California.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing? Listening to you on KFI AM 640.
The Monster. I love it.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, Mike.
I wanted some help here. I wanted to see if you can decipher something. I have a quatrain here that I have from a book, Erica Chetham, the final prophecies of Notre Dame is written in 1989, but she says here, which is funny, she says, the great Senate will see the parade for one who afterwards will be driven out, vanquished. His inheritance will be there at the sound of a trumpet, the possessions for sale, the enemies driven out.
Okay, now that sounds, with luck, I think that's, yes, there it is. We got lucky. That is almost two quatrains down from the last one I was looking for.
Yeah.
That is quatrain 76 of Century 10. I'm aware of Erica's work. She was one of the first volumes of Nostradamus that I studied when I got into this so many years ago. Mm-hmm. Although, I have, I think, a different... Let's see what I say here. It's short enough. I will say it. This is my interpretation of the translation. It says, the great Senate will discern the parade.
Okay.
For the one who afterwards will be driven out, vanquished.
Okay.
His adherents will be there at the sound of a trumpet.
Okay.
Their possessions for sale, the enemies driven out.
Okay.
Now, this is an example of something else, like pin your hopes, fears, expectations, each generation on this prophecy. This prophecy has been, because there were senates back in Nostradamus' time, in fact, Provence had senates in all their towns and cities, so it could be about that. An American in the 20th and 21st century will see great senate, oh, that's of course got to be about my senate, not a thousand other senates that it could be. But with that said, this was my fling at interpreting this open to interpretation quatrain, and I said this during 45 May Day celebrations in Red Square. The great Senate of the United States took note of the military pomp and ponderous anthem of the Soviet Union strutting its Cold War clout before world television. Then the Berlin Wall and communism came down with a crash. Today, many of the Soviet military hats and greatcoats, pieces of the wall, and assortments of Lenin statues are sold in the West as souvenirs. A more serious development in the bargain sale of Soviet conventional chemical and nuclear weapons is also on the world's black markets.
Hmm.
That's what I got from that.
Well done. Let's move on. Let's take another call, Wild Card Line. You're on the air with John Hoag. Hi there.
Yes, good morning, George.
Sure.
Good morning, John. My name is Kevin. I'm calling
Hello.
From Sacramento. John, I'm in the middle of your book, The New Millennium.
Oh, great.
And I'm telling you, my friend, you do understand where you're coming from. Nostradamus was a very curious person. Life path number of 8, he can really take you in circles if you're not careful. Fascinated with the number 9. Have you noticed the I know you've done this. Quatrain. Take the letter Q. Take the C. Add the numbers of the quatrain and the century. Then find the house that corresponds to that number in the zodiac. You'll find something very interesting concerning the people of the time period he's talking about, if you can decipher the time period. Very interesting man. What do you do spiritually to decipher? What do you do spiritually when you go into these quatrains? Any preparation at all?
Yes. I try to have one foot in objective research and another foot in the subjective, because this is intuitive work as well. And now, there have been people who try to cram Nostradamus up through the left side of their brain, and there have been people
right.
who have gone in wild fantasies about talking to him and other things from just living in the right side of their brain. I would like to be remembered as somebody who tried to find a balance between the two, and the
Very
way
good.
That I do that is through the discipline of the science of self-observation. I have been a practicing meditator for over 25 years, and I contend, and history will be my judge, that by being a meditator, not only with Nostradamus, but with life in general, one can gain a distance from the mind, from the emotions, and in that distance attain a relaxation that's profound, which allows one to see things as they are and accept things as they are and gain a strange and ineffable mystery of something that is far, far bigger than all our problems on this sorry little earth.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a final caller. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Hoag. Hi.
Hi, John. I have a couple of quatrains that have really been
stumping me, so I hope you can help me. Quatrain 2, the blue leader will inflict upon the white leader as much evil as France. I hope I...
Okay, give me the full index so that I can catch it in time with the time that's left.
And we'll only have time for probably one of these.
Okay, so quatrain 2 of what century?
C-I-I or 1-1. I'm not sure.
2-2? Two, two.
That's it.
Okay, I'm putting it in my computer. And here we go. It is... The blue turbaned head will inflict upon the white turbaned head. And I put turbans in parentheses because it really just says the blue head, la tête bleue, faire la tête blanche, which means that literally the white head, the blue head against the white head. As much evil as France has done them good, death from the great antenna, hanging from the branch. Seems to 16th century attempt to describe a satellite dish.
Yes.
When he is seized, the king will ask how many of his men have been captured. Now, except for the modern term of the branch, and except for the stretch in translation that might consider it to be turbaned people because of other prophecies that talked about turbaned people, but that could be wrong. I mean, one thing I say in my interpretation is that the blue head could be a UN person as well. But again, this is one of those half looking like it's clear enough about our time, but still open to all kinds of interpretation. And I don't know if I have time to read the
interpretation. Nope.
So,
the clock's got us.
There you go.
You want some more information, you just get to HogueProphecy.com. It's already set up. Just go to CoastToCoastAM.com. Link up with that. John, very soon we will find out, will we not?
I think we're weeks to a month away.
All right. We may have to get you back on just so you could say, I told you so.
Or you can all laugh at me, hopefully.
That would be nice, too, wouldn't it?
Yes, I would love that.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Mr. Webmaster, Barbara Simpson, and always Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, and I'll see you on our next edition of Coast to Coast.